Welcome to the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. Here's the host of the show, Bart Blair.
Welcome to episode 8 of the Revitalize My Church podcast. My name is Bart Blair. I want to thank you for tuning into this week's episode. We create this podcast so that we can help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and fruitful future. We know that being a pastor who's trying to lead your church through a revitalization or a vision refresh, a season of transition, can be very challenging. And we want to provide you resources and tools and encouragement to help you along the way. If you haven't yet subscribed wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, make sure that you do that. And if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time now, up to 8 episodes at this point, we hope that you'll leave us a rating or a review. If you'll do that, especially on Apple Podcasts, it'll help more people find the podcast. And maybe you've got a friend or a ministry colleague that could benefit from this, make sure that you share it with them. If you haven't checked out our website, revitalizemy.church, I would encourage you to do that. We've got some additional resources as well as some articles and other things on the website that could be a benefit and a blessing to you. You can also reach us there. There's a form that you can fill out if you have any follow-up questions or would like to dig deeper into any of the content that we've discussed on this podcast. We'd love to be able to do that with you there. Well, today I have the privilege of introducing to you, I'm going to call him a new ministry friend of mine. His name is Dr. David Hsu. And Dr. David Hsu is the senior pastor, the lead pastor at West Christian Houston Church. Now, until we recorded this podcast episode, we hadn't actually met, but I did have the fortune of hearing him speak at a conference early in 2024. And he spoke about how he revisioned his church to be more effective at reaching their community. His story is really quite fascinating. The church is a Chinese church, or started as a predominantly Chinese church. And while it's still predominantly Chinese, they recognized that there were some cultural shifts that needed to happen in the context of their church if they were really going to affect effectively reach their neighbors. And I think that you're going to find the things that he's done, the things that God has done through their church to be very helpful and hopefully a real blessing to you, hopefully a real encouragement. Well, thanks again for tuning in. Here's my recent episode with Dr. David Hsu from West Houston Christian Church. Well, Pastor David, thank you so much for joining me today on the Revitalize My Church podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Bart. Thank you so much for having me.
You are doing great. We are both in the great state of Texas. You're in the Houston area. I'm in the Dallas area. Before we started recording, we started discussion about how warm it is in Texas at the time that we're recording this episode. I don't know when it's going to release, so it might not be hot by the time this episode comes out, but it's hot today. Yes, hot in Houston?
It sure is. It sure is.
It's
feel like 100, but it's not. Yes.
Yeah, it's hot and muggy in Texas. Well, we didn't get on this podcast today to talk about the weather. We got on this podcast today to talk about church health and vision for church. And you and I have never met until today, although I had the opportunity to hear you speak at a conference earlier in 2024. I sat in the audience and I listened to you share your story. And the whole time that I was sitting there, I was thinking to myself, I know a whole lot of people that need to hear this story. And so I got home and I emailed you and corresponded with your assistant for, it feels like it's been a few months, I think. And we finally got this lined up. And I really appreciate you spending the time with me today. Why don't you just kind of start by sharing your story, your ministry journey, how you ended up at West Houston Christian Church?
Great. Well, thank you so much, Bart. Really appreciate the opportunity. My story, if I can start a little earlier in life, is I was born and raised in Taiwan. My family immigrated to the U.S. when I was 14. That actually, prior to that, there was a little bit of a hardship, which was also how I really came to know the Lord Jesus. Was that my father passed away when I was 12. And so our family immigrated to first in New York City, and then was in Boston. So I went to high school, went to college, and I worked in the Boston area. My ambition in life during that time, I was by training electrical engineer, worked as a computer chip designer for a couple of years. My ambition was to be successful, maybe have my own company and American dream, you know. But the Lord Jesus took me by a different path. I would say my senior year in college, went to a missions conference. And for the first time, just being challenged with the idea that God may have a different plan for my life. I raised my hand. As soon as doing the altar call, I raised my hand. I regretted it. I said, oh my goodness, what have I done? I'm going to get sent to Africa. But anyway, long story short, that didn't happen. But about 2 years later, I quit my job with the Dallas Seminary. And I still was thinking that I would be going on the missions field. But then I got involved in the Chinese Heritage Church, which are, you know, primarily Chinese immigrants churches here. There were a lot of needs. So I come out of seminary. I came to Houston, joined the new church plant. At the time, our church was called West Houston Chinese Church. And so so I joined that church in 1993. And for some years, I was doing youth ministry, and I started working second generation English speaking adults ministry. And then in the year 2000, our founder and our senior pastor retired and passed the baton to me, which was kind of highly unusual because I was 35 at the time. And in a Chinese heritage church, we venerate the aged. So usually if I was 53, I may be lucky to get a senior pastor's position. I was 35. So it was just really the grace of God. And so we started that journey. And I've been pastoring ever since at the same church. So last year, I celebrated 30 years here. My two kids were born here, raised here, and they're in the ministry now. My wife and I are extremely grateful for the opportunity we have had at this church. We have planted several churches in the area and overseas, and church planting continues to be part of our passion and heartbeat. And I'm looking forward to see where God leads us next.
All right. Well, thank you for setting that up for us. Now, I know because I've heard more of your story that the church that you are pastoring today is culturally, in a lot of ways, very different than the church you became a staff member of over 30 years ago now. You've led the church through a lot of transition, a lot of cultural transition. The culture around you in your community has changed a lot. Can you tell us a little bit about what the church was like when you first got there? What were your roles and some of your responsibilities and things that you were doing as sort of an associate or youth pastor in the church? What did that look like in those early days?
Sure. So when I first joined this church, our church is in almost entirely Chinese speaking, with the exception of the youth. And so I was kind of helping out working with the youth. And, you know, I myself, since my own upbringing, I grew up sort of in the U.S. And so my Chinese level of Chinese actually kind of ended in junior high. And so, over the years, you know, we have developed a English adults ministry, and so also intermarriages and that. So we've been thinking about from a vision perspective about how West Houston Chinese Church have a place to continue to grow and expand and minister to a larger audience. Now, we are still predominantly Asian for sure, but we are opening our doors up. And but I think that's a part of the story we're going to get into because especially for ethnic congregation, we're deeply entrenched with cultural pride and cultural heritage. And so when I started trying to make that change, I found some interesting surprises.
Well, so you are on the staff of the church for, 7-8 years? And then you were called to be the senior pastor of the
senior
church.
Senior pastor, right.
As you stepped into the role as the senior pastor, were there things that you looked at that you knew immediately were going to need to change? Or were these things that God sort of revealed to you over time?
To tell you the truth, the notion of moving us from a Chinese church to a church that's named that will welcome all that instead of being marked by our cultural, by a cultural or ethnic distinctive, was something that had always been on my mind. But when I first started, I knew that it wasn't time to do that. I think if I started right away on that, I think I may not be sitting here to talk to you. Things could go pretty badly for. And so there were many things that, one, we were aging as a church, we were growing older, we needed to reach younger people. We were struggling with a system of ministry that was really just an older, more antiquated system. So I felt like the Lord was moving in my heart to first to help transition our church to small groups, to strengthen our community. The church has always had a heart for evangelism, but we also been talking about church planting because our own church were planted. So we have always felt like we are going to plant churches one day as well. So I felt like that was an inherited mandate from my former senior pastor, as well as I think I sensed that people were thinking, but we didn't know how to do that. So that was the kind of a vision picture for, moving forward. But in the back of my mind, I was also thinking that somewhere down the line, I would like to see us moving beyond just a ethnically marked church to people welcome all people in a more intentional way.
It's very interesting when I think about it and when I was listening to you tell your story. Obviously, the culture of your church is formed in significant ways by the culture of the people, right? And then the name of the church sort of in the initial days when it was West Houston Christian or Chinese Church, it reinforced the culture of the church, right? Those two things sort of went hand in hand. And I think that some of the things that a lot of pastors and a lot of church leaders face today are the same. They're different, but they're the same because not all churches wrestle with the ethnic aspect of it. But the name of the church says a lot about who they are, and they want the name of the church to reflect the culture of the church. So maybe it's a denomination in the name, or maybe it's a physical location in the name, or maybe it's just a historical heritage name. In some cases, you have churches that are memorial churches named after a person. And changing the name of the church is a really, really big deal. You didn't just change the name of the church. You also led the church through a cultural shift, saying we're going to be a church that actually reaches more people than just those who are currently the people type or the people group that are part of our church. What were some of the things that you did in the early stages to begin casting vision for the people in your church that there was a different future ahead of you, that God was leading you to a different place?
Well, early on, I mean, I didn't want to make this the main issue. It was always kind of something where, like, during different times when I preach, I would say something about, you know, one day, you know, the Lord is going to move us to welcome all people, you know. However, I would say maybe about 10 years ago, because we made this change last year, you know, the name change. So about 10 years ago, I think I made the first more intentional effort to speak to a fairly significant group of leaders about this idea, inviting them to discuss it and inviting feedback and so forth. And so I feel that I was a little bit surprised. I was a little bit surprised at the level of pushback. I was a little bit surprised at the fact that, in fact, some of the pushback I got were not from the Chinese people, we're from the non-Chinese.
Really?
They were like, some of our Caucasian people, they were saying, like, why are you changing your name? You know, this is who you are. You know, what's with that? So I was like, oh man, I'm getting on both ends of the stick, you know, that the, first of all, I realized that I was a little naive, like more intentionality is needed. And I also sense that there is there's timing in terms of what God is doing. And I knew that if we're going to make a name change, this was not just going to be a branding discussion. In fact, I would not want to frame it as a branding discussion because people, when they think about brand, people think about like business, secular, mm-hmm. almost like, you know, just putting on something to woo people in or something. So, but at that time, I think I realized that I thought I had laid some groundwork in terms of talking about this from time to time. But then I realized that I was not well prepared. And I felt like pushing forward on that conversation at the time would not have been helpful. And so I backed off and I just kind of prayed about it and started thinking about, okay, what comes next in preparation for this as the church mature and grow.
Okay, so you brought this to some people in the church. You got more pushback than you were anticipating. You then pulled back sort of your own initiative to spend some time praying, thinking, processing what might come next. what was your next step of action? Like, how did the Lord lead you to take your next steps to readdress it? Did you go back to the same people? How did you address and overcome their objections?
Well, it's interesting because some of the stuff that I took, the steps I took later on, at the time wasn't intentionally for this purpose, but in retrospect, it became the stepping stone to that. So anyway, we saw that the church still needed a clarifying of missions and values. So we went through an exercise in terms of just redid our mission, redid our values. We were working, with Oxano at the time, and we were also looking at going through some of that stuff and developing a vision frame. And so some of this stuff happened just before the pandemic as we were leading into it. And I felt like it turned out that the mission statement became a very, because I didn't even think that I framed the mission statement intentionally to do this. But I feel like maybe subconsciously, or just the Lord graciously, a combination of all that become kind of a real ideal, you know, because our mission statement, we reworked our mission statement to welcoming sojourners home to the joy of following Jesus together. And so the idea that we want to be a church that welcoming sojourners, and we identify ourselves, because in essence, the sojourners and the immigrant experiences, because predominantly we had an immigrant community of people. But sojourners give us a different word to think about that in some sense is a biblical word that we're all sojourners in that sense. And so as we start talking about that, we said, well, what kind of sojourners are we welcoming? And we said, how are we going to open our doors wider to welcome all sojourners home? And so that become a natural platform for this conversation to move forward. And then the other thing is that when we developed a vision of moving forward, the vision was not just about this. That there's a three part to this vision, what we call expanding the tent, which we talk about how there's an aspect about how we're going to build, how we're going to deepen our stakes and strengthen the spiritual formation of the body. And so we talk about how that's the spiritual formation part of it. We talk about our identity, and we talk about how identity maturation. And that has to do with this, that how we're going to mature in the sense that we understand about who we are in the kingdom and what our missions is. And then finally, there is a missional part of it, which is how we are going to move forward with a decade of continued work on multiplication in church planting. So this formation, maturation, and multiplication, which forms this vision picture. And I find that when we started discussing this, people just connected up. They feel like, yes, that makes sense. We do need to mature into this. And yes, that makes sense. We do need to welcome all sojourners home in that process. And so the second time go around, it was just like night and day. Because I started in the early last year to start getting the leaders buy-in, and the leaders were on board. They said, why don't you start talking to focus groups about that and with the different congregation? Because we have multiple languages spoken in our church. And so we talked to focus groups, and then overwhelmingly people were supportive. And we preached over it in the summer, in late summer. And by the time we went to a congregational vote, a membership vote, at the end of last year, we had more than 99% support on that. So it was a night and day compared to, say, 10 years ago when I tossed the idea out and I felt like I was immediately getting bombarded and pushed back on, what are you thinking? What are you trying to do? What's going on? Yeah. And so I felt like having mission and vision purposes and leading into this conversation has been used by the Lord to help us in that journey.
Okay. So let me see if I can summarize what you sort of walked through there. When you first delivered the idea to people in your church that you were hoping you could get buy-in for, you had some rough ideas about where you were going, but it really wasn't fully synthesized. But by working with Oxano and getting down to the core of those, determining your mission, your vision, clarifying your values, kind of answering those, who we are and who God has called us to reach and what God has called us to do, by clarifying those things, when you were able to more clearly articulate those things and cast a more clear picture for where you were headed, it was a lot easier to get people on board, I'm assuming. Yes?
That is correct. In fact, when we were working with that mission and vision, the name change wasn't even in a discussion.
Right.
It was just strictly looking at where the church need to go, what we need to do. But you are totally right. I feel like gaining clarity and gaining buy-in for the mission and vision, once you have that, then the moving forward thing that makes sense, then everybody just feel like, yes,
yeah,
we can see that now and we want to go there.
Yeah. You know, I have the opportunity to walk alongside a lot of churches that are rethinking their purpose, their mission, their vision, their values. And then the name change in a church often comes up in a discussion. In fact, the fellowship, the denomination that I'm part of and have been a part of, our denomination, our fellowship changed its name. Yet many of the churches have held on to the old name. And changing the name is a hard thing. It becomes a very personal thing to people.
Yes.
What I really want people to hear is that the name change wasn't the reason God has transformed your church. It changed from the inside out, right? It wasn't an outside. Changing the name is cosmetic, really. It's changing the sign on the front. It's changing how we label ourselves, but it doesn't really change who you are on the inside. And so can you talk a little bit about how you went from kind of clarifying your values, clarifying your mission, your purpose, and your vision to where you're heading? What were some of the things that you did to begin implementing that new vision and those values so that the culture in the church was really becoming the culture that you dreamed it could be?
Well, I would, first of all, I would just want to clarify that we're not fully there, you know, in terms of, I don't have a specific goal to make the church look like United Nations or something like that.
Right.
So we're not driving to a multi-ethnicity. We just say that we're open to who Jesus wants us to be. We're going to welcome who Jesus is going to allow us to invite in our neighbors. But we've always talked about how we have two sets of neighbors in terms of there's an ethnic community of neighbors that culture, as well as just our everyday neighbors. Most of our people work with people from all, you know, Houston's most diverse city in the United States. And so we work with different people. And so we talk about how loving our neighbors means both of those things. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like what we did is in a way confirming the direction that the Holy Spirit is moving us anyway. And as we beginning to welcoming others, actually it's interesting because during the pandemic, we saw more people just like, we never been invited. They just kind of coming in. And our signs still say Chinese, but these people are like, they say, could non-Chinese people come in here? So of course you can come in here. And so we saw that during pandemic, a lot of changes are happening, and we started welcoming people. And the other thing I think is the hearts of the leaders. I do think that as we set our missions and vision, the leaders' hearts beginning to be shaped by that picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of glad that I wasn't trying to overthink and make maybe name change a driving factor. I think that probably would have ended badly. Simply because a lot of times people are attached to names.
Right.
People feel like there's a part of themselves in that. And so we went through a whole sermon series about biblical name changes. They usually mark of spiritual maturation, or who you thought you were and what God wants you to be. And we talk about what organizations have done this to show that the direction on that. And we talk about why we're changing, what we're putting to make that change. And we feel like this is a part of our maturation process. I was extremely grateful.
You know what? That's fascinating. I don't know that I have ever had a conversation with a church regarding a name change and then actually looked at the biblical examples of name changes. But the Bible is full of people whose names were changed at very significant and very pivotal times in their spiritual maturity. That's a very interesting fact that you pointed out. I guess it makes it a lot easier for the people in your church to actually see that you're not inventing something. This is something that God has been doing pretty much since, well, was Abraham the first person whose name got changed? I'm not sure if he's the first one, but that's the first one I can think of. right? You're not inventing the wheel there. This is something that God has been doing for, you know, forever, since people have been on the planet, I guess.
Right. There was also a side note that might not be of the interest to all the listeners, but a part of the challenge we're facing also, there was also a political nuance in that. Mm. The Chinese name in it, for some people were questioning whether or not there was a political motivation in change. So we, from very, very early on, we want to make sure that we want to steer away from that. We said, this is not about that. And that's what I could keep saying, that this is not a branding exercise. This is something to do with we are sensing what God is growing us into. It's a maturation, spiritual maturation. And also we talk about how this is also connected to our mission, how in a way this country opened its door to us, her door to us, that welcome us home. And today we too, as part of this overall culture, we too are opening our doors to welcome all sojourners home. And so a part of our church planting heart is also not just in terms of maybe reaching like mainstream, but we want to work with some of the other subcultural groups and immigrant groups that's struggling. And so we want to be able to welcome them and how to maybe leverage our resources and what God has taught us to help them plant churches and help plant churches to reach them as well.
Well, that's fantastic. I have a big heart for church planting, as I shared with you before we started recording. And again, it's just part of your story that I think is absolutely fascinating. I'm learning from you. This is fantastic for me, and I hope that our audience is learning as well. One of the things that just sort of came to mind as you were talking about the name change again, the name change is in many ways it's a superficial thing. It might, in any case like yours, changing the name might have given some people the opportunity to walk through the front door who might have resisted before. When it was called West Houston Chinese Church, there might have been people who wouldn't come because they just expected or assumed that it was a church for Chinese people. The name change or the name may allow more people to come in, but people stay because of the community and the culture. It's not the name of the church that keeps people there. Share with me a little bit about what someone would experience if they come to your church from a cultural standpoint, regardless of what the name of the church is. If I came to your church today or this weekend, how would I be welcomed? What would that look like for me? What would the experience be like?
Okay, well, great. Well, first of all, I just want to say this. We tell our people that the name change isn't going to accomplish the mission on its own. Okay. Right. And anybody can slap a sticker on it and say, well, some new and improve or whatever. And that's not going to change. And so we say it may open the door a little wider, but at the end of the day, it's still going to be how we do our hospitality, how we live missionally, how we welcome people, how we receive people that maybe very different from us. That's going to be made a difference. Just like you say, they may walk in the door, but they're going to stay because of what they found there. So if you come to our church, you will still see a predominantly Asian congregation, because we just have so many Asian Americans and Chinese Americans. But we do have many different people with us now today. I think you will find a very welcoming and warm church. Our cultural and heritage still carries through in that. We're a hospitable church, so every Sunday we have lunch together, and that's kind of an ethnic distinctive. I actually always wonder how come more churches don't do this, because we every Sunday we have lunch, we invite our new friends to stay after, have lunch together, and have a fellowship. When I go to some other church and visit after service, I always kind of surprised that, ooh, we're not staying for lunch, like everyone just left. And so just sitting down, having a meal, talking about things and learning about each other in life, that's a part of the thing you're going to see. Another thing you're going to see is that you're going to see different languages being used. We have a Mandarin service. We have a Cantonese service. It's two different dialects of Chinese language. We have an English service. We host a Vietnamese church. We would like to maybe probably branch into in the future Spanish and other language, but we would just say I would just say that you will see you will hear sometimes different languages being used. If people only want to hear English, they're probably going to find this is going to be a little odd. But yeah, if they're comfortable with the idea of hearing different languages, I think they will find that themselves kind of really welcomed and excited. And so we're a highly missional church. A part of our goal is to continue to plant churches. We, in the past, we have mainly planted churches also like ourselves. So a part of it that right now we're joining with a group like Houston Church Planting Network, and thinking about how we can plant different kind of churches and connecting with other church planters in terms of being fruitful in the kingdom.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna go on a little bit of a rabbit trail before I get us back on our script, because you brought something up that I think is, I want to dig into this a little bit. Okay. One of the things we didn't talk about at the beginning of the episode, because I don't always want this to matter for those that are listening to our podcast, but what is the average weekend attendance in your church? How many people are there on a Sunday morning?
On an average Sunday morning, we're not a very big church. We're about 800 to 1,000 people.
Okay.
Average Sunday attendance, okay. Yes.
So you say not very big, but I'm going to guess that the average person listening to this church is probably pastoring a church of about 50 to 80. So they're going to say your church is a big church, okay? So I don't like to lead with that, because I don't want people's opinions or ideas to be tainted by the size of your church. But this is the one thing I have a question about. How in the world do you do lunch every Sunday with that many people on a Sunday? Okay, I was at a church, and I'm asking this question because I was literally at a church a couple of weeks ago. That's a church in revitalization. A year ago, they had 8 people on a Sunday morning. The last Sunday I was there 2 weeks ago, they had 50. So they're growing. God is blessing them. They actually had 10 baptisms on the Sunday that I was there. It was wonderful.
Fantastic.
This church, one of the things they've been doing is they've been doing lunch after their service together every week. And one of the discussions that we had while we were there was, I just asked the question, I don't know how scalable this is. Like, how big can the church get before having a meal after the service on Sunday is too much to manage? Well, you've clearly scaled that far beyond what I imagined. Tell me what the logistics are that look like. What does that look like on a Sunday?
Okay, that's a different story altogether.
I know.
until the pandemic, we cooked. And so we had different small group in rotations. We have a kitchen ministry team of people that many of them have worked in restaurants or still working in restaurants. So we have a restaurant level kitchen health department approved, licensed with ginormous walking cooler and all these things in there. So there's a professional team of people that leads that. But the small group goes in there on Friday or Saturdays. A chopping team goes in there to do all the prep. And then Saturday, some of the stuff already started pre-cooking. On Sunday, they cook and getting ready. So that was what before pandemic. After pandemic, a lot of things changed. Well, first of all, food and things like that really just, a setback. And then also a lot of people who used to run that this ministry have gotten older. And so we reevaluated. We really felt that we don't want people to be in the kitchen. We used to pipe the Sunday sermon into the kitchen. Okay. But the honest truth is they weren't paying a whole lot of attention to the sermon. They were cooking and cooking away there. And so we have now we actually we cater out. And they deliver a large quantity of food, and we have a packing team that packing them into smaller portions. And so we really want people to worry less about the food, but really value more about the fellowship. The food is the purpose, the mean to the fellowship afterwards. And we find that having food afterwards is powerful in connecting people after church.
Okay.
But you're right. It is a crazy thing.
It's a big undertaking. Okay, I just wanted. I know that was a complete rabbit trail, but just because it was fresh on my mind from having had this conversation with the church recently, I thought it was worth asking. Let's get back to the idea of vision.
Okay,
and I'm keeping my eye on the clock here as well, because we're getting close to the end of our time together. As you think about the pastors, the men, the women who are listening to this podcast, who are doing their best to try to lead their churches to a new and different future, casting vision, working towards, most of the people that are listening to the podcast are in a church that has probably been stagnant or in decline for quite some time. And they recognize that the culture around them has changed, yet their ministry methods are probably still somewhat antiquated and no longer effective at reaching the people in the community. In many cases, the congregations are aging and they just don't have the same energy level, the same ability to do stuff that they used to be able to do. For a pastor who's sitting there who's trying to process how to lead his church, cast a vision, find a new way forward, do you have any encouragement or even any practical advice that you would share to someone who's sitting in that seat where you've been to help them at least just get started?
Sure. A couple of thoughts. One is I just feel like vision and relationship are closely linked. And an effective vision that can be owned by all. It's not helpful if just one man got the vision and everybody else just trying to pick it up, catching up. So I would say, even if you have a very clear vision about what you need to do, you may need to dial back a little bit to walk with people so that they own a piece of this in the vision and the formation of the vision. Because I think that if people have a hand in the formation, they're more likely to feel like this is their ideas. I don't have to be the genius, look like the genius who have come up with a great idea. I want to dial back and not to think like so that they could think with me and work with. So it's just vision formation of bringing people together. And the other thing I feel I found this experience that I'm looking back on that and realizing is that as we clarify our mission and working on something like that, I feel like that provides a framework that will help, again, everybody to leverage off that framework into the future. Because when we're just tackling about, you know, what kind of outreach we're going to run, what kind of worship music we're going to do, what kind of a style preaching we're going to do, all those very, very practical issues, which oftentimes polarizes. And then, you know, the older people say, oh, you're just going to abandon all of us. You're going to go for the young kids, or you're ashamed of our denomination, you know, or you know, you're just going to go to this tech stuff, you know, you're just going to abandon. You know, those who hold the good book, you know, bring the big book with them every Sunday. I mean, those, I think the mission place is where we can come together. And so I feel like the work on missions is not wasted. That provides a leveraging point to help everybody move forward. And I also just think that praying together is such a big thing together. I do realize that this is become a cliche among them, but it is truly that. Bring your leaders to visit churches that has journeyed, renovated their church, that has innovated, has moved forward and transitioned, and go visit with your people with a prayerful heart and see what the Holy Spirit had done there. And then come back and say, you know something? The same Spirit can do the work here. How we can do that? So I always feel like bring the leaders with you to visit and see what God is doing is a helpful thing for all of us. Just some real simple thoughts. Yeah,
I think they're simple, but they're profound. Thank you for sharing that. As we wrap up, Pastor David, as a leader outside of Will Mancini and the Oxano team, who clearly you've leaned into them for some direction. Who else do you listen to? What else have you read, or who do you read that really kind of helps you as a leader keep your saw sharp and help you move forward as you're leading your church?
You know something, I'm actually not the best person to ask that because I don't really follow people. I'm just maybe a little attention deficit or something, so I bounce around. But I would say in recent years, from earlier years, you know, I was really I'm big on, you know, Leadership Summit, you know, I went to hear Bill Hybo and all this other stuff. But in recent years, I've really been just all the things that the Exponential crew has been doing. I felt like on the church multiplication end has been really been inspiring my heart to think bigger in terms of not just my church growth, but kingdom growth. And I felt like at times when I take my eyes off the my church growth and to think kingdom growth, I actually think that the Lord bless the growth that we would like to have. I think sometimes our eyes are a little bit too much on myself. So I have found that the Exponential and some of the stuff that there has been very encouraging and inspiring to me.
That's excellent. We're big fans of Dave Ferguson and the Exponential team.
Yes.
learned a lot from them over the years, and I appreciate that. Pastor David, I want to thank you again for joining me on this episode of the podcast. For those that you have made it all the way through, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. If you haven't yet subscribed wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, maybe this is the first episode you're tuning into. We release an episode on the 1st and the 15th of every month. We have more great interviews like this one coming up here in the next month, 2, 3, 4. So please make sure that you subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Until the next time, I'm Bart Blair. This has been Pastor David Hsu from the West Houston Christian Church. And we want to thank you again for tuning in.
Thank you, Bart.